Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 30th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole, brought to you by our friends at Smiley's Breezy Vapes. Special guests for this episode include Commander Guy Snodgrass, Neve Schulman, the host of Catfish the Show and now on Dancing with the Stars, actress Liz Priestley, who is making her film debut in the soon-to-be-released Concrete Cowboy opposite Idris Elba, and RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan. He'll be visiting about the movie Cutthroat City that he directed. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, and if you like it, share it with your friends. Up first, our special guest is Commander Guy Snodgrass. We'll be talking about his new book, Top Guns Top 10, Leadership Lessons from the Cockpit. First off, Guy, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Hey, Cameron. Great to be with you. I love Oklahoma. I got a chance to live in Enid, Oklahoma for part of my training and spend a lot of time there. So it's great to be with you.
Yeah, Vance Air Force Base, just up the road. Of course, we're Altus Air Force Base here. And for you, the Top Guns Top 10, this has been, a building story for you over the stretch of your career. When did putting it down on paper and sharing with others, when did that first come to you?
You know, I would tell you it first came to me when I was a Top Gun instructor. I was still very young. I was incredibly busy. I didn't have the time then. But I just simply remember looking around and saying, I am surrounded by some of America's best men and women, people who care deeply about this country, people who want to be the very best in their chosen career path, in their profession. There's a lot to learn here. So I continued to keep notes. I put a lot of deep thought into what I was learning. And as I grew in my own career, and then when I had a chance to work with Secretary of Defense James Mattis, be a part of the Trump administration, I was able to say, yeah, those lessons I learned about 10 years ago still apply no matter how senior you get. And that was really what crystallized the desire to put this into a book and get it published.
And what do you think is the biggest misconception about the Top Guns? What do you think it is? Is it the chip on the shoulder? Is that what you think the biggest misconception is?
I think the biggest misconception might be that because of the first movie, it's this competitive environment where people are really going head to head, trying to best each other and become the top graduate of the class. That doesn't really exist in the real Top Gun program. Everyone is incredibly competitive because you want to do well, but rather than competing head to head, it's more about teamwork. If you see a student struggling, you jump in and you help them out because you know you might struggle a week or two later and they're going to help you out. So I love the fact that there's a lot of teamwork. It's a cooperative program, and it really produces some amazing men and women who continue to go on and serve their country.
And this is something I talked with one of the women's national team members earlier this week, was talking about how there's so much being pushed about the individual. But this is a great opportunity to remind folks it's kind of hard to do things completely on your own, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about being a fighter pilot, is that you have this image of one person sitting in a cockpit of a fighter plane, and they're doing everything by themselves, and nothing could be further from the truth. I spent most of my career on board a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. You've got around 5,000 men and women on that ship just to make sure about 50 airplanes fly and perform their mission. So it's a huge team effort. You've got amazing people handling a ton of different jobs just to make sure that you can be successful with the mission. And I've always loved that about that sense of teamwork.
And what was it like the first time that when you had the fatigues on and everything, getting in the cockpit the first time officially? What was that like for you you personally?
You know, it was the realization of a dream come true. I had grown up in North Texas. I had spent my summers as part of a Boy Scout program I was in, fundraising on board for space. And so you'd have either the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, you'd have the U.S. Navy Blue Angels perform the air show. And I was just captivated by that. That became my dream at a fairly young age. So when you climb into the cockpit for the first time, like you mentioned, you've got your flight suit on, your oxygen mask, and you kind of just have that realization that, wow, the thing I've dreamed about for years is coming true. And so, one, you feel very humbled, but it also helps you recommit to wanting to do your very best because you've been given a really fantastic opportunity.
And what goes into the before you even get into the plane? What is the kind of stuff that they have to do? Is the mental preparation as important as the physical? Obviously on this side, right?
Oh, absolutely. In some cases, the mental may be even more important than the physical. You've got to be in great physical shape. But, you know, a lot of the lessons I put out in the book are about exactly what you said. It's about that mental preparation, about being able to anticipate problems, about staying calm under pressure. So those are the types of skill sets that not only help you when you're flying a high-performance fighter aircraft going Mach 2 across the sky, just as much as when you're a parent with kids during the time of coronavirus, or if you're in a time of transition with your job, because there's stress that goes along with that as well. So all those skills and lessons pay off no matter what you're doing.
And how much different of a transition is it going from being a fighter pilot back to a regular everyday life?
You know, I'd say the biggest transition point is what I was told early on in my career, and that is that the military can be a very special place. You have a shared sense of purpose. Obviously, you're there because you put service before self. And when you transition into the private sector, you know, it's what's fun about it is it's just, the sky is the limit. In the military, you have a fairly static career path, you know, one path you can walk to continue to go forward in your career. Well, when you're in the private sector, really the sky's the limit because you can pursue a lot of very interesting things that you might be interested in. And I've had friends who maybe got 10, 15 years into their career, realized they wanted to do something different, and boom, they just switched and they were off and running. So I've really enjoyed that about the transition into the private sector.
And again, the book, Top Guns, Top 10 Leadership Lessons from the Cockpit. Guy, I want to make sure and let folks know where they can find more information about the book, pick it up, and also everything you got going social media-wise as well.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Cameron. I appreciate that opportunity. You can follow me at Twitter at Guy Snodgrass. You can also follow me on my website, guysnodgrass.com. And it's for the book. I'd love for you to check it out. It's available every day on Amazon. You can also find it at Barnes & Noble, and some of your local booksellers might have it as well. So I really appreciate that, and I really hope that people will pick it up and just not only enjoy some great storytelling, but the lessons that go along with it.
There you go. Well, Guy, it has been great to visit with you this morning. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Sounds great, Cameron. Enjoy your day. Thank you.
And would like to say thanks for sponsoring this episode to our friends at Smiley's Breezy Vapes. They're located at 313 Falcon Road. They've got the largest selection of disposables with over 150 flavors to choose from. From the novice to vaping legends, as I like to say, Smiley's Breezy Vapes, they've got the selection, the know-how, and the customer service to take care of you today. Again, the number at Smiley's Breezy Vapes is 580-471-VAPE. You can also check him out online at smileysbreezyvapes.com. Up next is host from Catfish, the TV show, Neve Shulman, talking about his appearance on Dancing with the Stars. First off, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Of course.
Now, is your love for Dancing with the Stars, has it grown or has it just matured, I guess?
I am having the best time. I've always loved watching the show, and I've always been a big fan of dance and supporter of dancers. So getting to spend so much time with Jenna, my partner, who's fantastic, and getting to, you know, commit 3 to 4 hours a day to dancing is just such a great thing. It just makes me happy. It at the end of the day, I'm tired but satisfied, and I'm having the best time.
Now, did you think you already had rhythm before, and are you just kind of blown away by how rhythmless you were now that you have a little bit of experience behind you?
Well, you know, I grew up going to a lot of bar mitzvahs and weddings, and so I always knew I had rhythm, and you know, I like to think of myself as a good dancer, but that was 20 years ago, and I haven't really done any dancing since then. So, and I've never done any ballroom dancing, so I really didn't know what to expect going into this. And it's been a sort of nice surprise to discover that I do have you know, a pretty good facility for dance. But I think a lot of people, if they had the opportunity to spend 3 or 4 hours a day working with a professional dancer, probably could dance too. It's just no one ever takes the time to do that. So it's been a blast.
And I know that you guys, tonight's episode is 80s night. And for you, is there a love for the 80s already there for you as well?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, obviously, I was born in 84. So most of my formative years and memories probably come from the 90s. But you know, in college, as a DJ at sort of small local college parties, 80s music, you know, was and obviously still is some of the best music to dance to. So getting to dance to, we're doing to Take On Me by A-ha, which is such a classic, and obviously the outfits and the energy of the 80s are just so great. They're very, you know, super positive, fun, bright, big hair, so it's a blast. We're having a lot of fun with it.
Now, how much more difficult was it trying to learn to quick step to A-ha, if you will?
Well, what's really difficult is that, you know, every dance style has different tempos. And in order to accommodate the quick step, we had to speed up the song considerably. So when I first heard it, it really came as a surprise. It was almost unrecognizable, but it's fun. I mean, look, anytime you can dance to a song that you know, that you've heard so many times, that you're familiar with, is an advantage, because just having the music sort of in your brain and in your body, and knowing and being able to recognize, you know, what's coming and where it's going, and having just danced to it at parties, gives you an advantage. So it's been really fun, and obviously by the end of this week, I'll probably never want to hear that song again. but it's been great.
Now, have your goals changed as the weeks have gone by after what you had coming into the series?
You know what? Yes, I would say they have. You know, obviously, the idea of winning is certainly there when you come on the show. But now, you know, that I understand just how difficult it is, and just how much both the dancing, but almost more so the, you know, performance aspect of it, and sort of winning over the crowd is part of the show. I'm less focused on just the dancing, and really more focused on all of the different aspects. And you know, I don't know, certainly from night to night, if I'm going to have the best dance. Obviously, the dance style and the song and all the different factors that go into the performance, you know, dictate kind of who gets what scores. So for me right now, I'm just focused. I'm going to keep my head down. I'm not worried about getting the best scores every night. I'm just worried. I just want to make sure I keep dancing. I want to make it to the next week. So it's not so much about winning right now. It's just about surviving.
There you go. Now, which judge's critique do you take the most heart to?
You know, it's interesting. They're each so specific in the sort of things that they look for. You know, for example, Carrie Ann tends to really focus more on the sort of emoting and connection between the partners. And that's something that I also really think is important. So for me, I think, you know, the performance aspect, and actually Derek said it last week, finding those little moments between the dance steps or you know, where you can make a connection and fill that space and tell a little bit of a story between you and your partner. Those are the things that I'm really focused on. And obviously, you know, Bruno's comments about my chest hair, I took to heart, and I did, in fact, trim my chest hair. So, you know, I'm listening to them. They know what they're talking about, and whatever I can do to show them that I'm serious about this, I'm going to do. So I think the judges are all great.
There you go. Now, Neve, I want to make sure and let our listeners know how they can be ready to vote for you tonight and also keep up social media-wise as well.
Yeah, well, so voting happens, obviously, live every Monday night. You can text in your votes to, if you text Neve, just N-E-V, to the number 21523. That's how you can vote that way, or you can vote on the ABC website. But more importantly, you know, as much as I'd love your vote on Dancing with the Stars, I'm encouraging people to make sure that they're registered and ready to vote in the upcoming election, because that's far more important than anything happening on Dancing with the Stars.
Well, Neve, that's good stuff. I appreciate that thought, and best of luck, and hopefully we can talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Again, this episode brought to you by Smiley's Breezy Vapes at 313 Falcon Road. If you ever have a question, give Shelly and the gang a call at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-VAPE. Or just stop in and see them at 313 Falcon Road in Altus, or online at smileysbreezyvapes.com. I've kind of coined the phrase from the novice to the vaping legends, but Smiley's Breezy Vapes, they've got the selection and everything you know to take care of you today. With the largest selection of disposables, over 150 flavors to choose from, that's Smiley's Breezy Vapes, 313 Falcon Road in Altus. Our next guest for today, I'm getting introduced, you're getting introduced as well, actress Liz Priestley on the line with us today. And first off, Liz, nice to meet you. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Liz, tell us how the acting bug for you began. Were you the ham at the Christmas parties and the Halloween parties?
Was. Yeah, of course. You know, and it's funny you said that. I just recently was sent a video from my uncle out in California. It was a video of me. I must have been maybe 6 or 7, which is around the time that I really did start being like, I want to do that thing where people make movies. How do they do that? That's what I want to do. But he sent me this video, and it's like, right after my dad bought his first video camera. So, you know, he's walking around the house videotaping just everything in sight. And I'm just jumping into every frame, like singing and dancing and trying my hardest to be the center of attention. It was like embarrassing to watch it as an adult, because I was like, wow, I really just always have been like that, haven't I? It's exhausting. But yeah, I've always wanted to do this since I was a kid, and specifically make movies. That was the thing. And, you know, growing up, I wrote my own little movies, and, you know, I was always begging my dad, like, can I borrow the video camera? And always getting my friends and family involved in little plays and things. And then as I got older, I did, you know, school plays and community plays. Along with that, I got into music as well. I'm a classically trained opera singer and also a violinist and a couple other instruments. But there was a point in time where, you know, I think my family and the people I grew up with, my friends and everyone at home, were really like, you're a gifted musician. I think you need to go that route. And I, even then, was still just like, that's not what I want to do. I know what I want to do. But I did, you know, go to musical theater, and I figured that could, you know, get my foot in the door. And so I started as an actor in theater for about 2010, and now I'm making my film debut. So, yeah, like, kind of, it's like, you know, when you're like, oh, my dreams are coming true, that feeling for now. So,
when tell the folks you're starring alongside pretty good company in your right.
Yeah, you know, not too shabby. Just Idris Elba. Nobody special, you know. I'm very blessed to be able to portray his wife in this movie. We're a couple who has been separated for about 15 years, and then my son in the movie is portrayed by the wonderful Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things. And so, yeah, I play this mom that, you know, I've been raising a 15-year-old by myself in Detroit, and he's been getting in and out of trouble at school. And I basically, you know, I'm at the end of my rope, and I go, you know what, you need your father, because I can't do anything else for you. And so I, you know, drive him in the middle of the night and dump him on his dad's doorstep in Philadelphia. But he happens to be a cowboy, which is not something my son knew. So that's kind of the basis of the movie, is like what he experiences in a place that he's like, you know, it's a city. What, why are cowboys in the city and black ones at that? But yeah, that's the movie I get to make my debut in. So yeah.
Now, what was your reaction when you got the call or the text?
Oh no, it was a call. You know, and it was so cute. The casting director, she's the sweetest woman, Diane Heary. She, you know, I've seen her before, and actually, when I went into this audition process, I really didn't even think I was up for the role seriously. I thought maybe, at least in the beginning, I thought maybe they were looking for like a stand-in or, you know, body double type of thing. I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going to get this part. But I really wanted her to see me do a dramatic role. And she was rooting for me the whole way. And in fact, when she got the word that I got the part, she called me immediately on a Saturday to tell me. And yeah, I'll never forget it. I was at my parents' house. They were away on a cruise. So I was in the house by myself, just, you know, doing laundry. And I got this call that, Liz, you got it. And I remember I laughed at her. I laughed. I smiled. I was just like so happy. I got off the phone with her and I called my parents in the middle of the ocean somewhere and told them, and then burst into tears when I told them. So it was like a bit of a delayed reaction, but it was pretty surreal. I mean, it was like, this is going to happen. This is real. Oh my, you know, I was like, wow.
how you talked about going in and reading and knowing some of these casting directors from other auditions as well. Mm-hmm. How do you keep your spirits up time after time? That's something I've always wondered as an actress.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's a tough dream. I mean, you hear more no's than yeses. And there's a saying that for every, you know, 100 auditions that you go on, you're going to hear 99 no's and only one yes. So you have to really have a thick skin to be in this in the first place, and just know that more often than not, you not getting the part comes down to something so arbitrary, like you're a half an inch too short, or we wanted someone with slightly longer hair or with blue eyes. You know, it's like stuff that's so beyond your control and has no bearing on your skills as an actor and a performer. So that's part of it, is keeping that perspective. And then I've also told the story before about in college, I took an audition techniques class my junior year that just really changed my life, because, you know, we had to do auditions every week, these mock auditions, and they brought in, you know, casting people from New York to come in, do these auditions, and then give us feedback after. And it really did prepare me for what that was going to be like, because not every audition is going to go well, and you're going to mess up, and you have to learn how to keep going. So I quite enjoy the audition process. I know most actors don't. I actually really like it. I think I use it almost like a rehearsal time. Like I really try to get into the mindset of who this character is, what we're doing. And it could be something as simple as like a, you know, a Walmart commercial. It doesn't matter. It's just, you know, you have to attack it the same way every time. And then just get used to the process. You go in, you do your best, you walk out, and you forget about it as much as you can. And then, you know, if you get the call, that's even better. And if you don't, it's just, you know, on to the next, you know. So I don't know. I think I've just gotten used to it, to be honest with you. And that's not to say that there aren't, you know, parts that have come up that I didn't get that I wasn't just extremely bummed about, of course. But, you have to realize that's also part of the process. And you give yourself a day to feel kind of lousy about it. And then the next day you go, well, all right, next.
And Liz, for you, what was the hardest emotion to master pulling off, if you will?
That's a great question. Well, in life, I'm pretty emotional. So for me, emotions are not that tricky. I will say, though, in this audition process, the character was written differently in the original phases of the audition, and then she changed a bit. And so in the original drafts, she had a much tougher background, and, you know, she was an addict, and she had all this other stuff. So for me, actually, what I found to be difficult for the first time in my life was I went into the audition crying, and I had to stay that way because I was like, if I'm going to make this choice, I have to commit. So, you know, the first audition that I did for it, I think I was in and out in 15 minutes, and I had to cry like that for 15 minutes. The second audition that I did for it, the director was there, but he got a phone call right before I was supposed to go in. And the casting person's like, oh, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. And 45 minutes later, I'm still curled up in a ball on the casting couch, like sobbing. At this point, I don't even have any tears left. I'm just kind of like, you know, dry sobbing. But I had to like maintain that for 45 minutes until I could even get into the room to do what I needed to do. It worked to my advantage because, you know, she was exhausted and so was I. But, you know, I think really, if you're portraying any kind of strong emotion, you know, grief, sadness, anger, that you have to maintain over time, it's just exhausting. But in general, I love the dramatic stuff. I love it. I think it's very therapeutic. I love just kind of sinking my teeth into that stuff. So for me, I don't know. It's not as much of a challenge in some ways because I relish it. I just jump in and go for it. I don't know.
Now,
I think
what,
I'm weird, but
what have you focused on personally in 2020? Since obviously we've all had to be a little introspective. What has been your focus?
That's a really great question. You know, it's two things really. One is really just getting the next phase of whatever my career is going to be off the ground, because, you know, this movie we shot last August, and of course at that time the pandemic wasn't even a thing, and we were thinking, you know, it'll be in a theater somewhere, and then, you know, people will see me and hopefully things will take off. And then of course several months later everything came to a crashing halt, and now we have really no idea what's going to happen with theaters and so on and so forth. So that's really kind of detoured in some ways the momentum that I was building with this movie. So I've been focusing on other ways to get my name out there and to, you know, make my presence known until this film comes out. So there's that. And then the other thing is really, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she is, you know, doing the online school thing. So I've really just been focused on how to be an at-home parent doing this online schooling. It's brutal. I feel so terrible for these kids and the teachers. It's just, you know, and I'm lucky. I have a 13-year-old. My sister has a 7-year-old, and it's like all she can do to get her to sit all day at a computer. And it's just, you know, so that's taken up a lot of, you know, my focus, because I know everyone's really trying to do their best to make sure that, you know, the education doesn't suffer just because we're at home, but it's really difficult, and I've had to be a lot more hands-on with that. So, you know, some ways it's great, but in other ways it's just like, my goodness, I had no idea there's this much work involved. So, yeah, it's a little bit of that, but, you know, the pandemic has just been brutal for everyone. I know. I don't even like to complain at all about it, because, you know, I have my health, I have a roof over my head, and I have, you know, income coming in. So it's, I'm in a good spot, relatively speaking.
And for you, the having a 13-year-old, who's having to have more tutoring? Is it you or you or your daughter?
You know what? To be honest, I would say it's probably an equal mix of both. It's crazy. I mean, she is, you know, I'm going to brag about her for a second, but she's, you know, in the gifted program at her school. So she's involved in a lot of extra stuff. That I'm just, you know, I look at some of the curriculum and I'm just like, I don't know how to do that. You know, she's in seventh grade and I'm like, I have no idea. And then for me, yeah, I mean, me and technology, it's just, we just don't get along. So I've had to learn how to do everything. And then, you know, on the other end of that, I've actually been working with an acting coach as well. So that in and of itself has been, you know, kind of a tutoring as well. So yeah, we're both learning. It's a good thing.
Now, Liz, if folks want to find out more information about the movie, social media and other things you've got going on as well.
Well, about the movie, I would say keep your eyes peeled, do a Google search. Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to say exactly when it'll be released. All I can say is I know it'll be soon, but there's still some discussions going on, so we're waiting to see a little bit. But yeah, it'll be soon, so just, you know, keep your eyes peeled for that. And there's some buzz going on with the movie. I'm seeing, you know, people's name pop up in the some Oscar prediction lists and stuff like that. So you'll definitely be hearing about it, I think. And then, you know, as far as me, I only have one social media account because me and technology. So I have a Facebook, and everyone can find me at Liz Priestley on Facebook. Or you can always check out my IMDb page at Liz Priestley, but that's basically it. I am not a Twitter person. I don't have an Instagram. I'm sure now that I've said it out loud, my manager will be like, Liz,
it's time.
It's time. Get with it. Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm too boring for an Instagram, and I don't know what I would tweet about. I'd just be like, well, it's good. I'm not a social media person, I don't think.
I understand that. Well, Liz, it has been great to get to visit with you, get to know you a little bit this morning. Look forward to checking out the movie and also having you back on again real soon.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Again, this 30th episode of The Good Questions with Cameron Dole is brought to you by Smiley's Breezy Vapes. Visit them online at smileysbreezyvapes.com. They've got the largest selection of disposables with over 150 flavors to choose from. Stop in and see them at 313 Falcon Road, or give them a call or send a text at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-VAPE. Again, online, smileysbreezyvapes.com. And from the novice to vaping legends, like I like to say, Smiley's Breezy Vapes, they've got everything to take care of your vaping needs. Well, wrapping up the program today is going to be RZA. You know him from Wu-Tang Clan. He'll be talking about the movie Cutthroat City that is available today. Born as Robert F. Diggs, a.k.a. RZA, on the line with us. And first off, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thanks for inviting me. Bong Bong, happy to be here this morning with you.
Now for you, the new movie that's coming out, obviously things have changed just a little bit in 2020. And what has the process been like getting a new movie out there, getting the word out, and trying to stay active with that as well?
Oh, it's very challenging. You know, a lot of theaters, of course, have suffered through COVID, closed doors, and we're losing a lot of cinema. And for me, you know, cinema and movies is like one of America's favorite pastimes, you know. But we're still here. We're, you know, this movie is now available. You can watch it at home in the comfort of your home, and I'm happy for the world to see it.
Now you've worked on soundtracks, you've written books, and the directing insight. Where did you draw your inspiration for the directing side of things?
I mean, this is my third film, so it took me some time to get my muscles right. I feel this is my best work to date. I started under the tutelage of great directors like John Woo, Tarantino, Jim Jarmusch. And watching, Hollywood, being an actor, I had a chance to meet a lot of other great directors. And I just caught that bug. And I know that I'm a storyteller. I know that I have the ability to tell stories. And directing is actually the epitome of storytelling. And it's like right up my alley now.
And you have got so many slashes after your name, for director, chess aficionado. Who would have known? But how much have you had to diversify things even a little bit more just to keep things fresh during 2020?
I mean, 2020 is a challenging year for all of us in so many different ways. And art does seem to be my way to escape. So whether I'm making music or playing a game of chess or enjoying entertainment films and things of that nature, I just keep myself occupied. I'm blessed that my family is safe and healthy, and I hope your family is safe and healthy and all your listeners as well out there. And it's a tough year, but always say the toughest time is during a period of labor, but after that there's birth and new life. So maybe we're in labor right now, and I'm ready for the next year to jump in.
And how important is it for you in everything that you do to put the best forward, and also to try to show others, regardless of what's going on around you, still putting your best foot forward and trying to make a difference in other people's lives?
I mean, that's important. Each one teach one, that's part of humanity. And I know that sometimes we feel like this world can be inhumane, right, and the treatment of us. But each one teach one, if you do it good, one of my models, I guess I could sum it up, is a better tomorrow. And I mean by saying that is that, look, even if today is good, you want a better tomorrow. But if today is bad, we all need a better tomorrow. So RZA's pushing for a better tomorrow.
I like that. And each one of us has to take that mentality as well to make a difference, regardless of what we're going through. Now again, Cutthroat City, tell folks where they can find more information. And like you said, watch it in their very own living room.
Yeah, Cutthroat City, available on Apple TV and, all the streaming networks. The cool thing about the film, too, is it's really timely. You see a situation where four young men who have their aspirations, but they turn into desperations because there's no opportunity. And the message I think I'm trying to give in the film is that even when there's desperations, you may be able to overcome them with determination and dedication.
There, you got a bunch of Asians at the end of that. That's good stuff.
Well, I'm a lyricist, so.
Yes, you are. And RZA, great to visit with you this morning. I want to make sure and let our listeners know as well where to keep up with everything social media wise.
You can check me out on RZA, at RZA, Twitter, at RZA, Instagram. And Cameron, I want to thank you for inviting me and having this morning cup of coffee with you, baby.
That's right. And we'd love to have you back and delve deeper sometime. Great to visit with you this morning, RZA.
Thank you. Peace.
Thanks again for joining us for this 30th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole, brought to you by our friends at Smiley's Breezy Vapes. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, find me on Instagram, Twitter, also on Facebook, our page, at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out with the funding for the podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. Plus, if you have a special guest idea, send me an email, Cameron@kwhw.com. We'll be back for episode 31 real soon.